You are listening to a sermon by Rosie Pereira, recorded on Sunday, July 24, 2011, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, according to the website this morning, I am supposed to be speaking on rehab, and I decided not to tell Kevin about that typo because I thought, well, that's actually kind of accurate. I am going to be speaking on something similar to that topic. I'm talking about the story of how Rahab, the prostitute, is rehabilitated by God into his purposes. So I thought that was actually a fitting little typo. As the back cover of a book about Rahab, a sort of fictionalized version of the story by Francine Rivers puts it, I think a good title for this sermon is Rahab, a woman with a past to whom God gave a future. So that is Rahab's rehabilitation. God is in the business of rehabilitating people on the margins who have muck in their lives, turning what was their shame to his good purposes. In spite of Rahab's seedy history, she goes on to be named as a model of faith and one who was justified by her works. So this morning we're going to take a closer look at how this came to be by diving into her story. First, some historical and geographical background. It's about 1400 BC. Moses has recently died, and the children of Israel are poised to enter the Promised Land, led by under the guidance of their new leader, Joshua. God has said to Joshua, "Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, as I promised to Moses." Jericho, which is northwest of the Dead Sea, just across the Jordan River from the Israelites' encampment, is to be the first possession of the conquest. And Jericho is the setting for the story of Rahab. Now, Rahab is one of five women who are named in the lineage of Jesus. We heard a little snippet of that today. The others were Tamar, Ruth, Bathsheba, and Mary. And all of these women have something shameful or undesirable about them. Tamar, remember, disguised herself as a prostitute and tricked her father-in-law, Judah, into getting her pregnant in order to carry on the family line. Ruth was a Moabitess, which to the Israelites was an outsider and therefore not part of the covenant. Bathsheba was the seductive beauty with whom David had an adulterous affair. And Mary was an innocent young woman from Nazareth, but there was a certain amount of scandal surrounding her too, as she appeared to be pregnant out of wedlock. But of all of these women, Rahab has and probably deserves the worst reputation. She's a bit of an embarrassment to Christians. She didn't just pose it as a prostitute once. She ran what the Criminal Code of Canada calls a bawdy house. And we had one of those here in West Point Grey. And actually, I am sad to report it is back in the same location. Yeah. We some neighbors wrote letters and got them not to have their permit renewed, but they're back again under a new name. But anyway, this was a brothel, Rahab's house. It was a place where men could come in and seek accommodation. So it wasn't just someone's private home. Rahab herself is described as by the Hebrew word zona, which means a harlot or a prostitute. There is no indication that she was one of what was called known as a temple prostitute. There's a special Hebrew word for that, which is not used here. So she was a common prostitute. Not like today's bedraggled streetwalkers, she was probably a high-class, self-employed prostitute, perhaps akin to today's escorts or call girls. She evidently made a decent living because she owned her own home. She might have even been a madam. Consistent with that interpretation is the fact that when Jericho is surrounded, Joshua tells the spies to go into Rahab's house and bring the woman out of it and all who belong to her. Her family is only mentioned after that, so one may think she had some employees in the house, possibly. There is some speculation that Rahab may have been personally acquainted with the king of Jericho, perhaps as a former concubine of his. Maybe she had been given this house to live out her years, carrying on the only profession she had ever known. after being discarded by the king. In any event, the king doubtless had some informers who were well acquainted with Shea Rahab, since he was immediately told of these spies that Joshua had sent in secretly. Some commentators think Rahab had most likely given up her promiscuous way of life before the events of Joshua 2, but others have pointed to the sexual innuendo inherent in the story and are not so sure. The Hebrew word used in verse 1 when it says the spies entered the house of a prostitute has sexual overtones. And the word translated spent the night also means to lie down and have sexual intercourse with. Even Rahab's name is suggestive. The Babylonian Talmud says the very mention of it could cause the speaker to be aroused sexually. The Hebrew word of the name Rahab means to open or broad. As in English, the term can simply mean wide or capacious, but when applied to a prostitute, more risque interpretations seem appropriate. It is the root used in Isaiah 57:8, when the Lord says to Israel, who has been unfaithful to him, "In deserting me, you have uncovered your bed, you have gone up to it, you have made it wide." That's the same root as Rahab. So essentially, God was accusing Israel of opening their bed to whoever might come in. The same root in Ugaritic can refer to the female genitalia. All of this evidence leads one commentator to suggest that the name was humorously appropriate for the woman's profession, like naming an undertaker digger. So Rahab was no mere innkeeper, as Josephus and some of the more prudish interpreters would have us believe, explaining away the obvious. She was indeed a woman of ill repute. Even if she had left that life of sin behind her, by the time the spies came seeking lodging, her reputation still defined her. Prostitutes might not have been judged as harshly in Canaanite society as they would have been in Israel, but nevertheless, it is not a life that most women would choose. She was likely the victim of an economic system in which women had no respectable opportunities to earn a living. Women like her sometimes found themselves on the edge of life, with slavery or prostitution their only options. In fact, Rahab is sort of on the margins because she lives in the city walls, so she's a marginal character with a shady, checkered past and a bad reputation. The euphemisms for sex in the story hint at an intimate affair between Rahab and the Israelite spies. In actuality, verse 1 states only that the scouts entered Rahab's house, creating ambiguity about whether or not they became her customers. What is clear, however, is that Rahab leads the king's representatives to believe they were her clients, thus gaining an advantage over the king. She declares to the king's men, "True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they came from," in verse 4. The implication of her statement is that she did not concern herself with their business in the city, only with their business with her. Now, Jericho was a fortified city. It was the gateway to Canaan. Rahab's house was within the walls of the city. Shonda Wilson, who is another one who has fictionalized the account of Rahab into a narrative form, notes the symbolic nature of this wall dwelling. She points out that Rahab was a woman living behind walls built up for protection, yet her life was far from painless. Shonda Wilson also brings Rahab's situation closer to home for us. She says prostitution is selling oneself, whether it be the mind, the body, or the soul, to get our needs met. So with this explanation, broadening the definition, we might even be able to imagine ourselves in Rahab's shoes. Though Rahab had an unsavory reputation, she was a resourceful and industrious woman. She had stalks of flax on her roof, enough to hide the spies under. Flax is a plant that produces beautiful blue flowers. I have in my sermon text, which you can't see, pictures of flax. I'm going to probably make this available for the web because it has some nice pictures in it. Its flowers were blue, and its seeds are the origin of linseed oil, and its fibers were used to make fine linens, ropes, and wicks. It is the oldest known textile fiber. Flax is an early crop, harvested in February or March, so that puts a kind of time frame on what time of year this story took place. After the flax was harvested, it would have been laid out to dry in the sun on housetops. It was customary for women to perform this task, and in Proverbs 31, this chore was among the marks of a virtuous woman. Proverbs 31, verse 13 says, "She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands." So it's interesting that Rahab is doing something that is praiseworthy of a woman in that time. The Mishnah, which was the first written redaction of the Jewish oral tradition, when commenting on Proverbs 31, it lists 22 women of valor who meet the criteria of this chapter. And among them are such luminaries as Sarah, Miriam, Hannah, Naomi, Ruth, and Esther, but also, surprisingly, Rahab. So she is a woman of valor, as described in Proverbs 31. In addition to having a sleazy reputation and being industrious, Rahab was also clever. She made a good bargain with Joshua's spies to preserve her life and those of her family members, and she outsmarted the messengers of the king. But wait a minute, how did she do that? She lied. She said the spies had left her house and departed from the city, when really they were still in her home. Then, when the men set out in pursuit towards the Jordan, she sent the spies off in the other direction to wait 3 days until the pursuers return. This act of deception has caused no end of consternation to readers, especially since James lauds it in verse 2:25 when he says, "Was not Rahab the prostitute also justified by works when she welcomed the messengers and sent them out by another road?" How is deception praiseworthy? Let me suggest two possible explanations. First, deception as a tactic in war was acceptable then, as it is now. The thing is, Rahab is positioning herself on the side of Yahweh and the Israelites in this upcoming battle, not her own people, the Canaanites. We also have an example later in the New Testament of the parable of the unjust steward in Luke 16, who deceives his evil master and is rewarded for it. So there is something about certain kinds of deception that God seems to approve of, or at least he looks the other way. And perhaps we might want to talk about that further in the discussion time, because I don't really understand it fully, why it is okay. But secondly, Rahab was not saved in a spiritual sense by her works, though her actions did result in the saving of her life. But her works were evidence of her true faith, and that's really where the crux of this story lies. Rahab's statement of faith is quite powerful. Her speech is bookended by these sentences. "I know that the Lord has given you the land." And the word for Lord there is Yahweh, which is uniquely the Lord of God, the Lord of God of Israel. And the other sentence at the end of her speech closes this: "The Lord your God is indeed God in heaven above and on earth below. She knows in whom she has believed, and is persuaded that he, by means of his servants, is willing to deliver her, even as he delivers Jericho into the hands of Joshua and the people of Israel." There is an element of fear in her words in the middle. "For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no courage left in any of us because of you." So she and the whole city of Jericho have heard that have heard of the Lord's mighty works on behalf of the Israelites. They are terrified of this people who have defeated the Amorites and put their kings to the sword. Yet Rahab is the only one who attributes these things to the God of Israel. For her, it is not just a faithless fear, as with her compatriots, quaking in their boots. It is fear of the Lord, an awe-inspired faith that leads to obedience. It is because of her faith that she is saved from the sword and later numbered in the honor roll of the faithful in Hebrews 11, which Janice read to us before, from verse 31. "By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had received the spies in peace." I've already mentioned two ways in which Rahab's faith, leading to action, is rewarded and how she is remembered in the New Testament. But I alluded to one other at the beginning of this sermon, and that is the legacy of her offspring. Ruth, as Janice also told us, was another one of the Proverbs 31 women of valor in Jewish tradition, and one of Ruth's mother-in-laws, the one we know best from the book of Ruth, is Naomi. But Ruth had another mother-in-law, the mother of her second husband, Boaz, and that was Rahab. Through Ruth and Boaz, Rahab becomes the great-grandmother of King David, and thus an ancestor of Jesus the Christ, the ultimate redeemer of all humanity. What greater honor and restoration could a prostitute be given? It is a reminder to us that God uses whomever he wants to in his plan of redemption, including sinners and outsiders. There is no indication in this story that Rahab was called to leave her life of sin, as Jesus did to the woman at the well, but in acting on faith, she is stepping out into a relationship with the living God who can rehabilitate her from her past. At the beginning of the story, she is just Rahab the prostitute. At the end, she, with all her family, are living in Israel. The scarlet cord that she was told to hang from her window is seen by some as a typological symbol of the blood of Christ, the saving, redemptive work of God. Another remarkable thing about Rahab is that we can guess from her life as a prostitute that her family probably had not been her main source of support, or any support at all, most likely. And yet she wants the spies to make sure they too are saved from the coming destruction. She has begun the process of being redeemed from her past life and can forgive and plead for those who might have contributed to her being relegated to that life. That is the transformative power of God's rehabilitation, or shall we call it, rehabilitation.